I don't have to explain to anyone that we have entered into Holy Week. Yesterday was the very prominent sign that something has changed. On Palm Sunday, it seems everybody in the world seems to show up for Mass. The Masses yesterday were very crowded with people carrying their palms. And if that wasn't enough to tell us that we're in these holy days, the covering of the images is another striking sign to us. I'm sure you noticed it as soon as you entered the chapel. The images are hidden behind violet cloth. One of the effects of the covering of the images is that since there's nothing to look at outside, it's as if we're forced to look inside. And that is a prominent part of the work of Holy Week. Holy Week is a time for the conscience. I know in the culture, Holy Week is a vacation time and people go to the beach and go to the mountains or go to Baguio or whatever. But the Church's vision of Holy Week is it's time to probe the conscience. It's time to make a deeper decision for Jesus. When we enter the city of Jerusalem, which we did yesterday, we find ourselves in one of two crowds, the crowd of joyful supporters and the crowd of angry opponents. And this contrast is very deliberate and it's clear throughout Holy Week. There's the followers of Jesus and the opponents of Jesus. And we have to be in one or another of those two categories. We might think we are just watching or we're not forced to participate, but no, we have to either be with him or against him. I was struck in yesterday's reading of the Passion by the two thieves crucified with Jesus. One is against Jesus, one is for him. One represents the crowd of opponents, one represents the crowd of supporters. One is bitter, one is humble. These are the options that we have. Either we blame Jesus for not saving us, or we thank Jesus for saving us. This contrast between opponents and supporters is in today's gospel as well. Actually, we're in this time between Palm Sunday and Holy Thursday. We have these 3 days, which Father Francis would sometimes call the little Triduum, a little Triduum, because the big Triduum is the Paschal Triduum, starts Thursday night. But the little Triduum, which we are in now, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, gives us an opportunity to reflect on this contrast between for and against. I've never heard it called this, but you could also call it a Judas Triduum, because every day we encounter the figure of Judas. Well, Judas was prominent in yesterday's gospel too. The betrayer. In the reading of the Passion, in Luke's version of the Passion, Jesus says, "Judas, do you betray the Son of Man with a kiss?" I'm not sure if the other Passion accounts say it that way, but it was certainly in yesterday's account. Do you betray the Son of Man with a kiss? Do you make evil look good? Do you hide your sin with seemingly loving gestures? This is Judas, and we can't journey through Holy Week without dealing with Judas. We'd like to not think about him or think about how evil we can be, but the fact is, the story of Jesus is connected to the story of Judas, the story of the church. Our story is connected to the story of Judas. And he has this capability of looking like an apostle and yet being a betrayer. Even in this account today, he comes up with this very generous sounding and very noble statement. Oh, this very expensive perfume could be sold for 300 days' wages, and the money could be given to the poor. Wow. What a beautiful idea. What a great dedication to the poor. That's what it looks like. We don't know if, aside from Jesus, who knew Judas's heart, we don't know if anybody saw through the hypocrisy of Judas. He looked like just one of the 12, maybe even one of the better ones. Pope Francis has often spoken about the danger of looking good, the danger of a religious mask which hides corruption underneath. He speaks about spiritual worldliness. In the world, we expect worldliness. We expect people to be greedy and corrupt and selfish. We expect it because that's the world. But in the church, where people are expected to be spiritual, it's worse. That hypocrisy is worse. We look religious. We look like we're doing lots of holy things. We might say holy things. We might look like we're serving the poor. But what's going on inside? Are we really betrayers? Well, we'll be spending more time with Judas in the next couple of days. So let's turn to the other side, the positive story that we see in this gospel, Mary of Bethany. What a beautiful person Mary is. Well, Mary, Martha, Mary, and Lazarus, so this is a beautiful family. You know that they have their feast day. It used to be the feast day of St. Martha. Now, Pope Francis said, no, we're going to call it the feast of Martha, Mary, and Lazarus. It comes in July, isn't it? I think it's July 29. Martha, Mary, Lazarus, the family, the siblings in Bethany. Well, here they are. Jesus is at their house. They're hosting a dinner for him, certainly in gratitude for his raising Lazarus from the dead. They would give Jesus anything. Their hearts are so full of gratitude. And there they are. Lazarus is at the table. Martha is serving. And Mary comes along with this very costly perfume, this aromatic nard. She anoints Jesus' feet. Sometimes it's hard to keep straight the gospel stories about Mary anointing Jesus, because in the other gospels, Mary breaks the jar open and pours the perfume over Jesus' head. It's an extravagant waste of the oil. In this version, it doesn't say that she breaks the jar, and it doesn't say that she pours it on his head. She anoints his feet. It doesn't really matter that much. It's clear that she's pouring herself out in gratitude, in honor to Jesus. She's stooping. She's wiping his feet with her hair, meaning she's bent over as far as she can get. She's putting her face to the ground so that her hair can reach his feet. She's prostrate before him. Exactly the opposite of Judas. Judas is rising up in greed and selfishness. Mary is bowed down in humility and love. Well, this came up on Saturday at our morning of recollection. Remember, one of the main topics we reflected on in the morning of recollection was the process of self-emptying love. Jesus, who was in the form of God, did not cling to his equality with God. He did not grasp it. Instead, he emptied himself. That's the pattern. And here we see Mary doing it. She doesn't cling to her liter of expensive, very expensive perfume worth 300 days' wages. She pours it out. She sacrifices herself. The evangelist points out that the fragrance of this perfume filled the whole house. It seems that he's making a contrast to Lazarus in the tomb. Remember when Jesus says, "Well, roll aside the stone," and Martha says, "Well, that there's going to be a stench. It's going to be a terrible smell. The smell of death is terrible. But the smell of the perfume is beautiful." So Jesus has overcome the stench of death. He's conquered death. He's raised Lazarus. He didn't stink at all. He's alive. And this smell of this perfume filling the whole house is a sign of Jesus overcoming, completely overcoming the ugliness of sin, the stench of death. After Judas protests about this waste, Jesus says something interesting. He says, "Leave her alone. Let her keep this for the day of my burial." I've always thought that meant this gesture means she anointed my body before I even died. Let her keep this. Let this be to her credit. But it sounds like, as I read it this time, sounds like he's saying, let her keep the oil, because she didn't break the jar and pour it all out. She still has it. She just anointed his feet. So she's holding this big liter of precious oil, and he's saying, "Now keep this, and then you can anoint my body for burial." Now, I'm not sure if I'm misreading it, but that's what it looks like. Telling everybody that he's about to be buried, which is going to happen in a week from this time. This is only 6 days before the Passover, so that's about a week before his death and burial. Oddly, when it comes time to anoint the body, Mary doesn't show up, neither does Martha, neither does Lazarus. They don't show up anymore after this passage. I don't know what happens. We don't hear about them at the foot of the cross. Well, Mary, it's hard to say, because there's so many Marys, it's hard to keep exactly clear who's who. But there's no mention of Lazarus at the cross. There's no mention of Martha at the cross. Well, maybe Lazarus had a good excuse, because it says here that the chief priests were planning to kill Lazarus anyway. He already died once. Maybe he wasn't ready to die again. I don't know. This is just pondering what's going on inside. You know, this is the week of the conscience. This is the week of exploring decisions for and against Jesus. Mary, for sure, made her decision for Jesus. She's pouring herself out. She's joining him in his death, dying to herself, and also joining him in his victory over death, the beautiful fragrance of the resurrection. This is where we are. We're forced to choose between for and against, between the camp of Mary and the camp of Judas. There's a beautiful traditional expression of this in the meditation. Perhaps you read it. St. Augustine described the contrast between these two camps, the camp of Mary and the camp of Judas, the camp of selfless or self-emptying love, great love for God, and the camp of self-centeredness, self-love. This is the famous quotation, the contrast between the two loves, the two cities. He's talking about the city of God and the city of man. The two cities have been formed by two loves, the earthly city by the love of self, even to the contempt of God, the heavenly city by the love of God, even to the contempt of self. Love of self, even to the contempt of God. That's Judas. He's so interested in getting his hands on the money, he's ready even to betray the Lord. I don't know what he did with that money, but he must have had a double life. Mary, who didn't have a double life, her whole life was love of God, even to the contempt of self. self-emptying love.